Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. Like always, I have a question for you. Have you ever caved under pressure in order to avoid conflict? You see, we like to think of ourselves as free and autonomous people. We like to think that our opinions are our own and that we have the courage and strength to speak truth to power. But in reality, most of us just cave under pressure. Think about it. If your boss or someone you hold in high regard challenges you, are you really willing to face the consequences of a certain conflict? In today's podcast and post, we're going to explore Paul's question to the church in Galatia because he has noticed that they have tossed out their freedom for the sake of keeping appearances or keeping certain people happy. Join me now as we learn why it is better to defend your freedom, even in the face of conflict, than to cave in for the sake of being nice. Hello, everybody. Thanks so much for coming back to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. I am your host. So glad to have you with me. I like to serve the world as an online pastor, author, and uncoach, among many other things. Welcome to the program. Welcome to Sunday. And I am so glad to have you here. All you folks who are signing up, the new people who are tuning into the newsletter, those of you who are signing up for the podcast, thank you so much for doing so. I work really hard to make sure that when you tune in, when you listen, that it is not a letdown. I am going to put content in here that will stretch you and enable you and empower you to grow and have a much better, fuller, richer life. Well, that's kind of overselling it, right? Well, I hope not. Folks, we are in the middle of a series, and we've been looking at it since the beginning of the year, this book of Galatians in the New Testament, and it's a letter from the Apostle Paul to the church, and he's got a lot of issues he's taken on, and I'm taking my time to go through it carefully, slowly, weaving the themes that are certainly apparent not only in this book but in all of Paul's teaching, so that you can kind of get a very good understanding of where he's coming from, what he's saying. So, folks, if you're not really tuned in to Bible studies and it's not really your thing, please don't tune out. This is something I think you're really going to appreciate. Today, we're doing episode number 170, and it's called Who Has Bewitched You? That's right, podcast number 170, Who Has Bewitched You? Now, if Paul were alive today, he would most certainly ask this question to the modern church. Who has bewitched you? Now, this question points directly at the heart of our beliefs. Will we place our faith in institutional religion or the inner experience of the gospel? Now, this is a big question. Now, it sounds like it's just focused in Galatia thousands of years ago, but this is a reality that we have to deal with all the time. This is a question about whether or not you have the courage and the power to speak truth to power. Do you have the ability to speak up, to defend yourself, to stand up for somebody else, to stand up for what is right, even if it means conflict? What if it meant you'd lose your job? What if it just meant your boss would be upset with you? What if it meant you'd lose a friend, a family member, or something like that? Folks, we all have been on the horns of that dilemma. How did you do? What happened? You see, something happens when we say, you know what, I'm just going to shut my mouth. I don't want to rock the boat. I got a good thing here. I don't want to lose it. I'm just going to forfeit my truth, my freedom, in order to be nice, to be friendly, right? And that sounds like it might be the honorable thing to do, and there may be a time when wisdom would say, hey, do that. But let's get to the heart of it. Anytime we do that, there is a diminishment of not only your own humanity, but others as well. And perhaps you were brought to such a time as that to speak the truth, and you're not doing it. Ultimately, it means you're going soft. You are not strong. You are not independent. You are not free. And Paul is getting at this, right? He's getting at this. And so we've been looking for the past several weeks at religion and the voice of religion in comparison to the voice of the gospel, this good news message, this new way of relating to God, not through ceremony and pomp and circumstance and process and transaction, but through inner experience, through kind of trusting what's going on the inside by trusting the Spirit, right? And there really are two operating systems that we see in the world. There are the externals, the things on the outside, and the internals, the things that are on the inside. And it seemed like Jesus and Paul in the New Testament is really focused on the inside, while religion and institutional power is almost always concerned with the outside. Now, throughout the series, I've shown that the gospel is this message that God has put things right. The word there is justified. He's justified all humanity, not just some, but everybody, and all creation back to God. I mean, there's no gap between any single person and God anymore. And secondly, I've shown that this message is particularly hard to believe. Whether you are a non-religious person, it's hard enough. But if you are a religious person, if you have a tribe, a denomination, a framework, a hard religion, that message that God has put things right with all people is even harder for you to believe. And so if it's true that the gospel sets into motion this new framework, it's an open floor plan, it's a way of understanding our spirituality and our practice, then faith is not a product of religion, as we're so often accustomed to seeing it. Yeah, you go to the church and you have a faith, the faith, defending the faith. But let's talk about our faith. What is it we believe? Right? Faith is not a product of religion, nor is it a theological construct. It's not that you just believe a theology. It's not an attestation to a set of creeds. You know, hey, we all believe in these 10 things and we have for the last 200 centuries. It's not a system of perfect compliance to a religious law. It's not like, oh gosh, you keep all the rules. You've been keeping all the traditions. You've been wearing the ceremonial garb. You've ate all the right foods. You've talked all the right way. You've learned how to do it all the right way. Faith is not any of that. So why are we so confused? Why are we empowering the institution of religion so much when faith is none of those things? You see, faith is this inner awareness. It's when you and I wake up to realize that the divine resides within us all. And even if you're a skeptic, a doubter, or an atheist, an agnostic, and you're not sure what that actually means, I promise you, you are sure that you know that there's times in your life where there seems to be this transcendent experience of something more. Something more is going on, right? And twice, Paul calls the church this process. In Galatians 3, verse 2, and in verse 4, he calls this process hearing with faith. That's just light, living life in faith, right? Faith is this higher consciousness that something beyond ourself, something more, a presence, a spirit, is always with us. It's always available. It always has been. The very nature of humanity is not just this physical being, but there's this something we can't put our finger around. We call it consciousness. We call it spirit. We call it awareness, right? And it's always inviting us into a deeper discovery, right? These are certain realities we can't get around. And Paul's totally good talking about that and being in that space and inviting people into that discovery to look closer, to experience this. Of course, he's surrounded by religious people all the time, and so are you, right? Religions have faith at their center, but too often it's obscured by this pomp and ritual, performance art, activity, politics, rule-keeping, comparing yourself to everybody else. See, we're the good ones. They're not. We're the star-bellied sneeches. We're the best on the beaches. Now, in Galatia, the church there was freed from all religious requirements, the religious requirements of Judaism. And they were free to experience God in a new way. They didn't have to take some goat up to the temple and slash its throat and splash the blood all over anything anymore. They didn't have to recite a particular prayer. They didn't have to eat a particular thing anymore. The God that was somewhere behind the dark curtain in the temple got out. Right? After Jesus died, the temple veil was torn in two. And so now the way of relating to God is completely different. And so this early church in Galatia had kind of figured this out. And you know, the church was free from religious requirements of Judaism. And they could experience God in new ways. And Paul reframed Judaism by showing that Abraham, he talks a lot about Abraham in his books, but he's always showing that Abraham was actually the father of this inclusive gospel message. He's not the father of a religion. Like, if you talk to people, people think, oh, yeah, Abraham was a Muslim. Abraham was a Jew. No, he predates the law. He couldn't have been a Jew. He certainly wasn't a Christian as we would define it. But somehow, Paul says, you know what? This gospel message was first given to Abraham. This inclusive message so that everybody is good, justified, right? This was an absolute scandal in the eyes of religion, both then as well as today. Like, people don't really think through it. Like, Abraham may not even have been a Jew. No. In fact, if anything, he may have just been a pagan. I mean, he did try and do child sacrifice, right? But somehow this thing, this other thing, this deeper thing, this something other, this voice, this spirit was calling him, telling him something to trust. Trust here. Go by faith, right? So he had this faith, this belief, and he followed it. And that was counted to him as righteousness, Paul says, over and over in many of his books. And so this is a scandal. It's the scandal in the eyes of religious because it's, you know, given the three main religions now, they all descend from Abraham, Christianity, Judaism, Islam. And the point is that you don't have to. You don't have to be a descendant of Abraham to be grafted into this faith that Abraham had. So that means the Eastern world need not be a child of Abraham. They're still included in the same structure. This is a very wide, much, much wider than I'm sure you've been hearing it taught in your local church. The Galatian church had Jewish people in it, of course, who, you know, they were there, just like they had Gentiles or non-Jews and Samaritans and half-breeds and everything else. But the Jewish people who, they just couldn't accept the width and inclusion of this gospel message on its own terms, right? There's always a people who are more institutional. They're more fundamental. They're harder to convince, right? It really needs to be the way it always has been. These people were insisting on adding the requirements of circumcision or abstaining from certain foods, and they were placing these burdens on this early church unnecessarily. I mean, they were freed from religious obedience to those laws, and now certain people who are in the church saying, no, we still need to do that. I mean, they couldn't escape the religious mindset of just being set apart or separated from all others by external displays. Remember, Paul's talking about the inside, and now here's people coming along saying, no, we got to make the outside look good too. It's just as important. And isn't that what we see today? Isn't that your experience when you go to church? People are really concerned about how it looks, the appearance of evil, all those kinds of things somehow seem to be important to people, but it's powerless in regards to what's going on the inside, whether your heart is in the right place or not. Religious law makes people feel superior to others, because if you're obeying it, then certainly God likes you best. And if you're not obeying it, it's obvious to everybody who obeys it. So they can look down on you and feel super righteous by comparison. You know, they saw themselves as holy, set apart. This is where we get our idea of holier than thou. We all know somebody who we cringe when we think of them coming to the dinner table who is holier than thou, don't we? We see this in every single world religion that exists today. Have you thought about that? Every single world religion seems to have the holier than thous. Oh my gosh, you don't meditate with a bell and a candle like I do. Well, I have incense and I have a rug. I have my own room. I have the Buddha. I have this. You know, you don't meditate for 2 hours. I only, you know, I do it for 4 hours. I mean, there's all of these comparisons. You know, you didn't really do the pilgrimage. You didn't really tithe like I tithe. You don't really pray like I pray. And so there it is again, right? We always find it. thousands of denominations now. Later, the Christianity that has become its own religion has now basically set up a whole new set of untold rules and purity codes and theologies and conversion strategies, right? Christianity has lost what it was, this free, be who you are, remain in the place you are, and just trust that thing that's going on inside you. It's become not only a competitive world religion, Christianity I'm speaking of, and when I say Christianity, I really mean churchianity. I don't really mean true Christianity. I just mean the cultural, expression of the Christian faith that we know so well today in our modern world. It's seen as a competitive world religion, but it's really just its own subculture that plays Red Rover with the city. It's reverted back to transaction rather than transformation. It's the subtext is still holier than thou. Right? And so Paul, if he were here today, he would ask, just like he did to the church in Galatia, who has bewitched you? Like, who's telling you this stuff? Where are you getting this fake news? Who asked us to create an elaborate prison when the founding message was the opening of the prison doors and the liberation of the captive, right? Isaiah 61, 1 through 3 and Luke 4, 18. This is all about the gospel. The euangelion is this opening of the prison door. And yet Christianity comes along and creates a prison to put people into that keep you afraid to ever get out. Really? Like, who convinced us? Who bewitched us that we needed to create a system to separate ourselves from the outside world, that we need innies and outies? We need to have a conversion strategy so that we know who's really in and who's really out. And the way you'll know is, well, they're going to put a chrome fish on their car. They're going to set their radio preset to K-Love. They're going to be here every Sunday faithfully on time, ready to serve, make the coffee, eat the donuts, shake the hands, take the offering, and you're going to give your money and participate and help us run our program. Right? That's how it rolls out, folks. Like, who bewitched us? Who convinced us we needed that? When the founding message was that there is no more dividing wall of hostility. We see that in Galatians 3:28, Ephesians 2:14, that there isn't a division anymore. So why are we still the star-bellied sneeches? Why do we care so much if somebody doesn't have a star on their belly, right? Who convinced us that the blessings of God are only for a small, new subset religion when the message, the gospel, predates religion, right? This is Paul's whole point in talking about Abraham in chapter 3, verse 17. Who has bewitched us? Think about it, folks. I know these are hard questions. And I know that this sounds kind of critical, but I do it with the hope of restoring you, freeing you, liberating you from a prison, an unhealthy prison that's going to take your time, it's going to take your weekends, and it's going to take your money. When you can follow that spirit unto God and reallocate your life in a way that will be completely transformative to you and everyone you touch. That's what the church was originally supposed to do, was to free you into your life, not to hijack your life, take you out of it. And 2,000 years later, and anyone who desires to return to the simplicity and authenticity of this globally inclusive gospel message is now seen as a heretic, an enemy of the church, or a dissenter, right? What I'm saying by a lot of people, a lot of very conservative people out there would really have a hard time hearing this. Some of you may be listening for the first time and saying, what is this guy saying? He's like so down on the church. And I'm not. I'm up on the real church. I'm just critical for your sake of the church system that we seem to have abdicated all our power to, our voice to, in the name of being nice and the hope that we'll be accepted. See, religion has become a propaganda machine with fewer and fewer adherents that are conscious of its core liberating message. I know that each religion at its core has something beautiful to offer, but we seem to forget the contents after a while and focus only on the container itself. And religion fears that if too many people believe the gospel, if people actually believe what I'm saying and stopped bringing their time and their money on a Sunday afternoon to the local community church, religion is afraid of that happening. Why? Because if people shed off the man-made constraints and the measuring system, which is what the early church was doing in Galatia with Judaism, if we shed that off today, then it would lose institutional power and the church would lose its control. And you know what? The church is right. They would. People would regain control. People would have personal power, not institutional power. And that is the whole thrust of the gospel. See, Paul's message was, and it still is, that the righteous shall live by faith. And the gospel framework is based on inner experience, not external compliance. So those whose consciousness allows them to see that there is something beyond themselves, there is a spirit, and it has taken residence within you, and that you shall live by simply believing it, by trusting it, by following it, by learning what it's saying and where it's taking you. See, no person is justified by God through the works of the law. That Paul said that in verse 11, right? A Christ follower is not better than others, but is marked by freedom, not labels and claims, which is what Christianity has become, right? If you're a Christian, you have to have all these external accoutrements to accompany that claim, or else other people in this subculture are not going to believe you're real. And a Christ follower ultimately need not have a description, a definition, because you're not subscribing to a new religion. You're simply following the work of this cosmic power that's been there since day one. It's always existed, and now it's found itself within your heart and your mind, and it's calling you. It's this voice that's saying, you know what? Go here. Do that. Explore this. Learn freedom from this guy. Learn, you know, wisdom from this woman. You know, trust this. Go with that. Be generous. Lay down your life. Give yourself away. See what happens, right? This is what it means to be a Christ follower. And as such, it's the person of faith, then, who should have the most enviable life. And the world today looks at people of faith and say, man, you guys, your faith has simply shrunk your life. It didn't expand it. It contracted it. And, you know, guess what? I don't want any part of it. And they're right. See, faith turns have-tos into get-tos. But too often, we think of our faith as simply a big obligation, because that's what religion has done for us. And Paul explains that we just can't ignore the law. I mean, it must be satisfied. It must be fulfilled, or we all must suffer under it. And he points out how Jesus suffered the condemnation of the law to free us from its obligations. So this is an interesting idea, you know, that Christianity offers, that says, you know, Jesus obeyed the law perfectly and then suffered under it, so that you don't have to obey it perfectly nor suffer under it. And Scripture says that he became the curse. This is verse 13 that we're looking at in chapter 3, right? He became the curse that was due to all lawbreakers for our unbelief. So it's our unbelief has already been paid for. Our unbelief has already been dealt with. This really abolishes the law. Ephesians 2:15, that's the word, abolishes the law. It abolishes ritual, religion for all humanity, allowing all people, yes, even non-Abrahamic descendants, to receive the promised blessing of Abraham. In other words, ollie-ollie income free, everybody gets it. Everybody gets it, not just this chosen few over here. That was a scandal to the Jews. And it's a scandal to modern Christianity if you say everybody gets the gospel and you don't have to convert to this Christian framework that you've been taught to follow. That's a scandal in the same way as it was back then. This is how I feel very confident that what I'm teaching is a revelation. What I'm teaching is you opening your eyes to something. And yeah, this is in some ways prophetic. See, Paul has to explain this to his Jewish audience so that they can accept his Gentile or non-Jewish audience as equal beneficiaries without sharing their religion. Think about that. Paul's teaching is that each person should be convinced in their own mind, like he says in Romans 14:5, and that their faith should be kept between themselves and God, verse 22. This is not following a whole new religion. How can you have your faith be between yourself and God and everybody be convinced in their own mind if you're setting up a bunch of rules and protocols and dogmas? See, this is not where we've gotten off the rails, folks. See, what Paul is promoting is true liberation. This is equality. We don't need institutional control or governance or regulation. We don't need a guardian anymore, Galatians 3:24. See, nor a king to rule over us. This is 1 Samuel 8:6, where the people of God said, "Oh, Samuel, we don't want God to rule over us. Just give us a king like everybody else has." See, instead, we are free to gather and celebrate the diversity of experience and the extent of liberation made possible by the gospel. Life. Life is our new practice, not some other thing that we have to do now. So all experiences of faith are equally valid, even though they're varied completely. And how could they be the same? Everybody comes from a very different worldview, a different perspective, a different socioeconomic upbringing. So how could your experience of faith be the same as everybody else's? Why do we need a system that tries to make everyone the same? Why not let each faith grow into what it will be by the power of the Spirit inside? See, no two people could possibly have the same experience. I mean, we each refract kind of a unique prism of God's light. You know, it's like when you have a little prism, you put it against the wall, the rainbow shines on it. But each shape of the prism changes the rainbow on the wall. And that's kind of like what we are. And through faith, every person is an heir. This is the teaching of Galatians. Every person is an heir, not a stranger, but a child of God, an heir. In fact, Paul goes so far as to say that in Christ, we're not even male and female. There isn't even a division between man and women, men and women. There isn't a division between slave and free, right? We are all one and the same. You see that in Ephesians 3:28. You see, modern Christianity claims that this is only for those who convert to the Christian religion, but in the light of Paul's gospel, that is absolutely untenable. How can you say all these huge claims of inclusivity so long as you are just like this? That is all Judaism ever did. And Paul is subverting that. He's not eradicating Judaism. He's simply completing it. He's showing it what it should look like. And that is what the gospel does. You see, excluding some from this blessing is exactly what Paul is warning against. Who has bewitched you? Who has hindered you? Those are Paul's questions to the Galatians church. It should be our question to the modern day church. And that's what this podcast has been. And so I'd ask you, is freedom what you see when you go to temple or you visit your mosque or you go to your church, whether it's Friday, Saturday, or Sunday? Is that what you see? Do you see people who are free and liberated and empowered? Or do you see people whose life are constrained, whose lives are shrunk and obligated with duty and burden and cost, all for some sake of this, what, upholding the big institutional framework? Really? Is faith free, or is it a strictly defined commodity of institutional power? Folks, I would like to suggest that it's the latter. It's not the latter, I mean, that it is not a commodity of institutional power. Faith is something we all share. Faith makes us, we are all heirs to Abraham because we have this faith, this something more going on inside of us. So is what you're seeing a closed system of innies and outies? If it is, folks, who is bewitching you?